Welcome to the Simply Financial Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Calandra. My guest today is Vince Carter. He is the CFO at Home podcast host. So Vince, of course, is a podcaster. He's also a husband and father, as am I. He has 30 plus years of corporate experience, having a variety of roles in telecommunications, technical and financial management. He is a self-described money nerd, which means he and I should get along extremely well because I'm a geek and he's a nerd. So we're a great match. And his professional, academic, and personal experience has evolved to the point where he loves to share his thoughts on a variety of personal finance topics, such as budgeting, investing, retirement planning, teaching kids about money, and planning, funding higher education costs for kids. Love the topic, love the bio. Vince, you and I don't know each other. So thank you for joining me today. I saw this on my calendar some time ago, and I've been looking forward to connecting with you.
As have I, Chris. It's going to be a great conversation.
So if we could jump right in, you have the Personal Financial Podcast, CFO at Home. I think about my question because I have my show, Simply Financial, but it is a vehicle for my financial planning investment advisory practice. It's a marketing outlet, a communication outlet for my core business. For you, I don't think your podcast is that intertwined with your career, right? So what made you want to start the podcast?
So first of all, you're correct about it not being intertwined at all with my current career. By day, I am still a technical professional in the telecommunications industry. But what made me want to start this podcast is I've basically had, as long as I can remember, two interests in my life. One is technology and the other is money. So it's like I followed one path as a profession and I've always wondered about money. Well, what would have happened had I followed that path? And there were things that I had to say and just a passion in me to help people with finance that even though I didn't end up doing it professionally, podcasting has given me a great outlet to really just help people with this topic.
It is such a wonderful evolution of technology, these podcast platforms that both you and I are taking advantage of. In some ways, similar reasons, but in some ways, different reasons. But the cost to entry of doing a podcast and getting your message out is so low. And it really is a fabulous place to go and get information, to learn, to get entertainment. So I'm a big podcast consumer and I've checked out your podcast. It's a great addition to my library, although sometimes I think that I really need to quit my job so I could keep up on my podcast show inventory.
It is definitely a challenge. I guess I wouldn't even call it a mixed blessing. COVID's been awful, a trial for all of us. But one side benefit, so to speak, that worked out for me is I am working from home right now. And that actually allowed me to take this concept that I've had rattling around in my head and actually execute on it. So the time that you put into podcasting, I really understand what you're talking about. But when you can do it from home, it really helps.
Awesome. So you've had this interest about money for a very long time. And so did I hear right that the timing of wanting to start the podcast coincided with being at home more related to the pandemic shutdown and that interruption? Is that right?
I think it's the thing that finally allowed me to launch it. It's been coming together in bits and pieces for years. It's funny. I launched July of last year, and when I was pulling the final bits and pieces together, I came across my podcast logo. And the date that I had saved that particular file was like January of 2018. So it's been coming together in bits and pieces literally for years, but it was really just the efficiency that I've gained with work from home that allowed me to very quickly pull all the pieces together and get things launched.
That's great, Vince. So what is, your show is CFO at home, CFO, just to make sure we're all on the same page, in the corporate world stands for Chief Financial Officer. So what does it mean to be the CFO at home, in your opinion?
The CFO at home, it's my theory that I think has been validated throughout the podcast that in nearly every family, there is one person who ends up bearing the load of the financial burden. And by that, I mean, not so much the day-to-day bill paying, but in terms of really, well, how are we going to send the kids to college? How are we going to save up that down payment for our house? What are we going to do about retirement? Those things usually fall either through interest or just maybe natural inclination or just by default to yeah, one person.
It could just be like, not it. And then, you know, the other party stuck with it.
Yeah, we sure don't want that guy doing it. So I guess it's got to be me. Exactly. So CFO at home, and I have played that role in my household throughout my family career, if that makes any sense. But I've played that role in my family, and from personal experience, I know that that can be stressful. It can be, I've had plenty of situations where, I mean, I felt like it's great to have your partner entrust you in that way, but there's a lot of pressure in it. So in terms of seeking, okay, well, I want to do a personal finance podcast. Who do I want to speak to? Well, I want to speak to people like me or who have been through the same experiences I have. Those are the people I can best speak to. So I wanted to speak to people who were carrying that unique burden in their family, and I call them the CFO at home.
Terrific. I love that. And it speaks to, I think, at least in my worldview, the idea of when you're trying to build wealth and win with money and make smart financial decisions in your household, that you do benefit from being a little businesslike in that approach. And that's why I really appreciated when you first kind of popped up, that CFO kind of speaks to that. And it doesn't mean that you have to become a financial geek or nerd like you and I are. I know you have your certificate in financial planning from Florida State University. I'm a certified financial planner, but you don't necessarily need to get immersed in things that much, but just a little bit of business discipline in handling money in the household goes a long way. You agree with that, no?
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, that's who I target the podcast for, is that person who finds that they have that responsibility, but may not be, you know, the money nerd or the money geek that you and I are. So the whole premise is, are what are the minimum base sets of skills that you need to be successful in playing that role?
So I'm curious, in my home, as you might expect, I take the lead in terms of the financial management of the household. And, you know, like a lot of households, that's not because my wife, Joelle, couldn't do it. She has a great degree. And in fact, she was a certified financial planner at one time, but you know, it's a divide and conquer kind of thing. In your household, how do you do checks and balances? You take that role and you mentioned that there's, you know, pressure that comes with it, but I imagine you would agree that a spouse that's completely in the dark about such matters is not a good strategy. And so what checks and balances, communication do you have in your household where you can take the lead, but she at least has some information to kind of keep tabs on things?
That's a great question, and I'll answer it specifically for myself.
Yeah.
But in answering it specifically for myself, I also kind of want to address the question just generically. I think appreciation of the fact that even if you are the CFO at home, that other person has something to bring to the table in terms of skill sets, I think that's essential. And I think recognizing what that person has to bring to the table and bringing them into the fold to contribute in that way, that's kind of the secret sauce. Specifically how that works in my household is First of all, my wife is an accountant by academic training.
Okay.
So that helps. But at the same time, she's not very interested in the planning aspects personally in terms of retirement and all those good things.
I can relate.
But what she does bring to the table is, for the majority of our married life, she's run the household. She's been in and out of the workforce. But the constant thing is she runs the household. And I refer to her, if I'm the CFO of my home, she's the COO. She operates the household. So once I started looking at it that way, I started to look at how our financial roles complement one another. Mm-hmm. So let's just take budgeting, for example. When I budget, I have evolved over the years from being a, okay, here's the budget, you need to stick to it, you can't go over any, to more of a looking at what she needs to run the household and say, okay, this is kind of what I've come up with, but you're the one running this show. You tell me. Mm-hmm. And turned it into much more of a collaborative situation. And that's one way to draw her in and engage her. So there's that. There are other things like just in the last 4 or 5 years, I've actually brought in a retirement planner onto my team, so to speak.
Right.
That's still a challenge, but I found somebody who is personable enough in that I think we get along with enough personally, where when we sit down with him, I sit down with him once a quarter and maybe I pull her in once a year. It's tolerable for her because even though it's not her favorite subject in the world, my planner and she have built a little bit of a relationship where even that part's tolerable. So
understood.
Yeah. So I've managed to engage her on both ends.
Because what I would say, and they're probably not the listeners of my show and probably not the listeners of your show, but if you're not the CFO in the household, you're the other party, you still want to engage to help the leader in this area relieve some of their pressure, but also provide a helpful insight because the CFO at home does not have all the answers. By the way, I'm impressed that your wife is the COO because mine is the CEO. So I work for her. No, I'm just kidding. Hopefully she doesn't listen to this episode. But in any event, you want to relieve the pressure on the CFO. You have a valuable opinion on most of what's going on, even if you're not as up to speed and immersed in the personal finance stuff. And that's a valuable contribution to what the CFO is thinking about and decisions that are being made. And then the last reason why you want to also be plugged in is because in a crisis, in an emergency, you do not want to be completely oblivious to what is happening in the finances in your home. And sometimes the non-CFO in the household says, hey, honey, you handle it. I trust you. You take care of everything. And you appreciate that confidence. But at times that kind of you take care of it completely could turn out to be a negative if things play out a certain negative way. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense. And I've come to all those realizations over time. Probably the last realization, and you hit on this earlier, is the wisdom and the value that that person brings. Because sure. Admittedly, for the longest, when it came to the planning and the investing and all that, she would turn it over to me and I would say, yeah, fine. That's my specialty. But I'll tell you, the biggest single financial mistake that I have made during a 20 plus year marriage, I could have avoided had I just listened to her. So the wisdom that person brings.
Absolutely.
Even though they're not, all into managing money and that kind of thing, just kind of the objective wisdom. If you have married well or partnered well or whatever your situation is, that person has something to bring to the table.
I couldn't agree more. And I've experienced that personally in many, many instances, and having worked with thousands of clients over my 29-year career, I've seen that play out numerous times. And you used the phrase about a team, you know, husband and wife, married couple, committed couple, like you said, whatever family structure you're involved in. The team is better when you're getting contributions from everyone on the team. And I believe in that fully. In my house, Vince, the way that we do it is largely based on the net worth statement. So I keep track of a net worth statement where add up all of our assets, all of our liabilities, and coming up with the net worth. And then each, there's a line item for each asset and each liability. And I'm such a geek, Vince. I'm super excited when I get to do that at the end of the quarter. I'm actually all jazzed up to do it. That's how much of a geek I am. And so she, probably like your wife, she has no interest in doing that. And she's certainly not all excited about, hey, we get to update the net worth statement. But I prepare the net worth statement and then we sit down for 5-10 minutes. You know, here are the numbers. Here's how much, what's happened with our assets. Here's what's happened with our debts. Here's what our wealth is, how that compared, say, to the last quarter a year ago. And then a quick conversation about what our plan is. You know, we're going to fund this priority, you know, could be add to college, maximize the retirement accounts. If we have debt, we might want to pay down debt, whatever the case is. And it just takes 5 or 10 minutes. And then certainly at times she's going to have opinion on things and she could certainly voice it. She is going to give feedback on what I'm thinking of doing over the next quarter or year. And also, if there was ever a crisis, she could pull up that net worth statement and quickly identify where we are, where the assets are, where our wealth is, where the accounts are, and that she would be able to step in if, God forbid, of something. And it only takes 5 or 10 minutes. It only takes me 5 or 10 minutes to do the net worth statement. I do it on an Excel spreadsheet, by the way. And it only takes a few minutes. So you're not investing a ton of time, but we get great mileage out of that. What do you think of that strategy?
I love that strategy. And now I have a question for you. I'm a podcaster. That's kind of what I do.
That's all right.
How long did it take you to develop? That is a very refined process that you have. I'm going to guess that that process that you're using now in year X of your marriage was not what you were using at the beginning of your marriage. How long did it take you to refine the process that you use?
That is a great question, and I'm glad you asked. I've been married, this year it'll be 25 years. I think we've been married roughly the same amount of time.
Yep.
So August of this year, it'll be 25 years. So we've only really been doing this refined for the last 6 years or so, 7 years, 2014. And we had versions of it prior to that, but it was a little more haphazard and a little bit more on the fly. The elements were there, but this refined, elegant solution for us, we've been using for 6 or 7 years. And it would not necessarily work for everyone, but it does work very well for us. And it is very time efficient for both of us, but especially for her, because it's not an area she necessarily wants to spend a lot of time in.
So how much of that refining was you kind of reining in your inner geekdom? Because I caught that now you have this one nice little neat spreadsheet that drives net worth. It's a one pager. And I don't know about you, but my inner geek has gotten the best of me at the time, at times. When we first got married, it was a multi-page spreadsheet that I would put in front of my wife, and you know, her eyes would roll back in the back of her head, as would any reasonable person who didn't have my particular sickness.
Yes.
just the elegance of having that one pager, that's like one of my big takeaways, even from the interviews I've done on the podcast, is kind of validated my own thoughts of, even if you are that CFO at home, and even if you are the money geek, you really need to simplify it. You really need to just kind of strip it down to the essentials when you're engaging mm-hmm. with your partner. Now, you can have your big monster spreadsheet in the background.
Oh, yeah.
And that, you know,
you geek out happy. On it when yeah. you want.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But keep that monster to yourself. It scares other people.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I'll tell you, and then we could kind of move on. This is fascinating, though. One of the mistakes that I made, and this is my personal, I'm not even talking about as a CFP professional, right? I'm just talking about our wealth building plan in my own household, is that I would look at things and think about something and then just say, hey, Joelle, I want to talk to you about this. And then I would like dump on her, but she wasn't necessarily prepared, interested in tackling it at that time. And so then I would also overspeak and give too much information, but also do it like when it was good for me, because I had been thinking about it, but she wasn't necessarily ready for good reasons. Where now I'll be like, hey, tomorrow morning, I'm going to be working on the net worth statement. So I'm going to need a few minutes of your time tomorrow, so that then she knows what to expect. And I'm not doing it while she's like, you know, Chris, you better hurry up, because I got to take the kids to the doctor. I got to go to the grocery store. I have to meet my boss, you know, whatever the case is. So that is an improvement too, that hopefully we get a little wiser with age. And that was created, that improvement was created by us butting heads and having some, you know, good old marital disagreements.
Well, it's the way we work out these things in any yeah. stage of life, that there's got to be a little creative friction there to get to the yes. right solution.
So tell me, switching gears, tell me, I'm dying to know what kind of household, Vince, you grew up in. You've had this lifelong interest in money. You've achieved, I haven't seen your bank account, but you are successful. The CFO of a house with two sons, 25 or so year marriage. What kind of household did you grow up in? Was it middle class, rich, upper middle class? How would you characterize it?
You know, I don't even know if those characterizations were around when I was coming up. So I never thought about it at the time, but looking back on it, I would say that we were working class, which probably, I don't know, roughly equates to, let's say, lower middle class. My father was in the construction, not the construction business. He was a construction worker. He was a brick mason. My mother was a stay-at-home mom for the most part. So we did have enough income where she did have the luxury of being a stay-at-home mom. That was a conscious decision they made. But in that, living off of his one income as a brick mason, which for a tradesman was pretty good, but
sure.
you know, still, you know, very much a blue-collar type background. Kind of lost my train of thought there, but I think I answered your question somewhere in there. So yeah, I would say lower middle class.
Well, you say, I thought you were leading to, when you were a child, and I don't mean like six, I mean more like a young teenager becoming aware of the world around you, did you have a sense of where your family stacked up financially, or were you just kind of oblivious to that kind of thing?
As I got older, I became aware. Yeah. And it was never a resentful thing. I always knew that my parents were doing the best that they could, but that there were markers in terms of, okay, you know, my folks are dancing as fast as they can. I get that. But when I grow up, I want to have this. I want to have that. I think that was part of the awareness. So just an example, I don't ever remember us going on a formal vacation. That was just not a part of our world. So me as a, you know, 10-year-old or whatever, watching Brady Bunch reruns, it seems like the Brady Bunch were always going on these vacations, that kind of thing. It's like, you know, when I grow up, I want to go on a vacation. And oh, by the way, I want to live in a 2-story house. So there's an upstairs like the Brady's have, that kind of thing. So I, like many kids my age, I was scarred by the Brady Bunch, but yeah, I was aware in that sense. And then I can remember as I got older, particularly in my college years, I think that's the only time it really started to bother me a bit, because I had jobs constantly. So I can remember distinctly I worked at a pizza place, delivering, cooking pizza. I can remember one summer I was delivering pizza, and it seemed like everybody I was delivering pizza to had more leisure time than I did. So while I'm, you know, sweating away, going in and out of a kitchen, sometimes I'm, you know, making the pizza, sometimes I'm delivering the pizzas. I'm delivering pizzas to people who are really just relaxing and having a nice summer, their pool parties and that kind of thing. And I think, you know, wow, that sucks. But I realized that they had greater means. So yeah, I was kind of aware, but it was not anything scarring or anything.
So what are some of the early lessons that you remember that you learned about money at an early age, either from your parents, grandparents, maybe your first working experience, but earliest memories of money, kind of rules or lessons? Can you recall anything that is something that stuck with you?
I don't know if there's one specific lesson, because it was never, you know, well, Vinny, sit down, we're going to teach you about money type thing. There were things that I picked up just from being around the family. My family didn't talk a lot about money, but there were a lot of things demonstrated. My parents, you know, I'm up there in age right now, and my parents were old when they had me. Okay. So add all that together, my parents were like Depression era people.
All right.
So that is just a mentality of frugality, and that, you know, you don't waste anything, that I think I've carried with me to this day. And really, I think it gave me a realistic view of money. Money was never magical to me. Money was never, or things were never magical to me. I always knew that they cost money. And I made the connection that if you don't have the money, you can't have that thing. So I think that's probably my biggest takeaway. Just briefly, there was one particular Christmas that always sticks in my head. Again, my father was in construction. Construction is a cyclical industry. It was in a down cycle. My mother took us aside, and that was the year I learned there was no Santa, because she said, you know, look, your dad's not working that much right now.
And he's unemployed.
Exactly. Or, you know, pretty close to it. It's like each one of you get $20. You know, tell me what you want for your $20 and I'll go get it for you. So yeah, frugality, I think, was the biggest takeaway, which has its advantages, and it also kind of has its disadvantages in the long run.
Yes. So I was with my extended in-law family this weekend, and my mother-in-law and father-in-law, we're talking old stories, just that the other thing, and you know, my niece and nephew and their significant others, so they're 20 somethings, right? So they were just talking, and I recalled that, you know, I grew up in a lower middle class household, you know, great, you know, two parent. I grew up in a wonderful, wonderful household, but you know, we lacked money. Didn't necessarily know it at the time. It wasn't that big of a deal. But one thing that does stick out is my parents were part of one of these like monthly meal plans, like a freezer plan, they used to call it. So, you know, food would get delivered for the month. And a lot of months we would have, we'd run out of food from the plan by the end of the month. And we would have breakfast for dinner. And I remember thinking, oh, we're having, you know, pepper and egg omelet, you know, pepper and onion omelets for dinner. That I know what that means. I know what that means. And the crazy thing, Vince, I'm 50 now, is that I love breakfast. I love breakfast. Any of that. Any breakfast food. Love it. Love it. Love it. But I never have breakfast for dinner, because I associate that with a shortage of money, of being poor. And it's silly, right? It's stupid. But I don't think in my adult lifetime I've ever had breakfast for dinner.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds silly, but I think it underlines just how psychological this whole thing about money is. And that's probably been one of my greater learnings.
Yeah.
Even doing the podcast that I do, is being a geek I thought I was going to have a podcast where I was, you know, breaking down the best spreadsheet to use, or, you know, comparing Mint to, you know, YNAB, that kind of thing. But very quickly, the momentum took me in a different direction in terms of really understanding, you know, just where our money mindsets came from. And I think that's what we've been talking about.
Oh, yeah. I think that is huge. And having the awareness, like, you know, I'm telling this, you know, somewhat dopey story, and it certainly has not held me back from being successful. But having the awareness of what you learned, you know, and it causes maybe some people to work too hard and have too much of a failure of not having too much of a fear of not having enough money, to somebody else not being able to delay gratification because they missed out on things when they were young, that they need to have it all today. And that could lead to problems with debt and an unhappiness with your financial situation. So there's a lot that goes into it that is beyond just the spreadsheets. But listen, Vince, let's leave it here. But there's so much I didn't get to with you. Do you think you could please come back and we could pick this up again and we could do the rest of the things I was hoping to get to today? Would you do that for me?
Absolutely. Anytime. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Awesome. So, Vince, if our listeners wanted to find your show, CFO at Home, I assume that's available on Apple and other podcast platforms, right?
It is, and it's also available at my site, which is thecfoathome.com.
Beautiful. And listeners of the Simply Financial podcast, thanks for listening today. Please subscribe if you haven't done so already, and I'll be back with you on the next episode of the Simply Financial podcast very soon. Again, thanks for listening.
The views expressed are not necessarily the opinion of Sage Point Financial Incorporated and should not be construed directly or indirectly as an offer to buy or sell any securities mentioned herein. Investing is subject to risks, including loss of principal invested. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. No strategy can assure a profit nor protect against loss. Please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Please note, the information being provided is strictly as a courtesy. When you link to any of the websites provided here, you are leaving this website. We make no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of the information provided at these websites, nor is the company liable for any direct or indirect technical or system issues or any consequences arising out of your access to your use of third-party technologies, websites, information, and programs made available through this website. When you access one of these websites, you are leaving our website and assume total responsibility and risk for your use of the websites you are linking to. Securities and advisory services are offered through Sage Point Financial Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, insurance services offered through Elliott Wealth Management, LLC, not affiliated with Sage Point Financial.